Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Welcome in to the Lotus Place. It is June 8th, 2016. I just love that cut right there by my friend Sikele Seshibe up there in D.C. What's up, Sikele? And what's up to King B? King B on the line. Welcome into the Lotus Place. How are
you? Thank you.
Yes.
How you doing?
I am doing very well, King B. Let me give out the phone number so people can call in, because we have a hot show tonight. And I'm going to conclude it, though, with playing a clip of Dr. Claude Anderson's Dirty Little Secrets. You know how these people keep these dirty little secrets, KNT? And if you do not take time to study, research, and read, oh my goodness, you will just be clueless and cannot connect the dots. And how you say, Canty, those with the ticking brain left?
Yeah, that's right. I don't think. That's
right. Okay. 641 is the number to dial. 641-715-3660. And the participant code is 549032. And Canby, they can press pound. Now, look, I just have to talk about, to kick off right away, this story. In fact, let me just share this clip. Canty, the story of the young man in Staten Island, as you call it, Satan Island. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Let me find this. Okay, here we are, right here, Canty.
A Staten Island teenager died as a result of his asthma attack after he was being chased by a gang of white and Latino individuals. Now, there have been no arrests in this case, but the whole situation started when a member of the victim's group of friends was in some sort of beef with a member of the other group, and apparently they were in an argument over a girl. That's all we know in terms of why there was a conflict to begin with. Now, the victim is Dayshon McKenzie, and he was 16 years old at the time that he was being chased. While they were chasing him, and he is not the guy who was having an argument with anyone, he just happened to be in that group of friends. While they were chasing him, he managed to climb fences, jump walls, and then find a shed where he could hide behind. Then he suffered an asthma attack as a result of that chase, and he died. Now, there was Diane Fatiagi there, who apparently saw him and tried to resuscitate him. She's a former NYPD official, a cop. And so she says, to me, it's murder. They were chasing him. That's a crime. You're hurting them because they're black. You're calling them a nigger. So she talked about what they were calling this group of black kids as they were chasing after them. They apparently also said, I got a gun, something that police officials were able to confirm later. And they also said, I'm going to shoot you, nigger. Now, I hate using that word, but the reason why I'm saying it is because I want you to understand the severity of what they were saying and exactly what took place at that time. I don't want to whitewash it or minimize it by just saying N-word. Now, the police, former police official also said that the group was chasing McKenzie and his pals, and they consisted of young white males and one Hispanic male.
One of the reasons to emphasize the race issue here, and kids dead either way, but is that the officers involved observed, quote, no indication of a bias element when filing their reports. And that actually could affect the charges that they get based on that. Mm-hmm. Now, here is a former NYPD officer and a 9/11 responder that Anna referred to saying, no, they were shouting the N-word. It was clearly racial. The group that was being chased said the other group had no blacks in it at all, mainly whites, some Latinos. And I get that the argument was over a girl in the first place, but they were definitely using the N-word mm-hmm. and chasing a bunch of black kids through the neighborhood.
With a weapon, with a gun.
If you're the cops, you think maybe you note that?
Yeah.
Right?
Interestingly enough, the cops were more concerned about the weapon than any, you know, racial bias that could have taken place. But how about be concerned about both, right? Because it's relevant. And especially considering the fact that there are certain hate crime laws that, you know, these individuals could be prosecuted with. I mean, I think it's all important. You have to take in all witness testimony and all the information you possibly can to make sure that justice eventually will be served. But it seems like justice isn't going to be served. No one's even been arrested yet.
So I want to be clear. So, of course, the cops should be concerned about the weapon, especially if they just got there. But what Anna's referring to is the minute they got there, they had everyone, including the people who were helping McKenzie, put their arms up, put their hands up. And they had to do that search, and then they got back to trying to help him. And meanwhile, the former NYPD officer who had responded had actually resuscitated him a couple of times.
Yeah.
And then they were trying to get him to the hospital, and then he finally passed away.
The story is so heartbreaking. Like, his mom, of course, is crushed. I could, of course, understand that. But she talks about how, you know, she always kept a really close eye on him and would not allow him to sleep over anyone's house. He always had to be at home because she was so afraid that he would have an asthma attack and people wouldn't know what to do. She wanted to make sure that she could protect him from dying from an asthma attack. And then that's what he died from, because of these stupid kids chasing after him with a weapon like that.
Yeah, and we have no idea if they were going to use the weapon, not use the weapon, but when somebody's calling you the N-word and chasing you with a gun, you run, you hide, and sometimes when you do that to somebody, they might have a condition you don't know about, a heart mm-hmm. condition, in this case, asthma condition, or maybe you shoot them and then they die, yeah. right? Or they run in front of a car. So it is a very, very serious crime, and it's just an absolute shame what happened.
Now, Canty, that story reminds me of what happened. I think it was in Bedford Stuy. Was Michael Beach when...
No, it was in Howard Beach.
It was in Howard Beach, okay.
Michael Griffin was the victim. Mm-hmm. And the man who hit him was a correctional officer who saw Michael Griffin on the highway. He swore he didn't see nothing. But yet now, this object that he claimed hit his windshield while his girlfriend mm-hmm. sitting in the front seat, he drove all the way out to his father's house out in Long Island and then came back with his father with the car damaged from the windshield, but he had erased evidence of blood and maybe flesh or hair from the grill of the car.
Mm.
So his father, being a police officer, tampered with the evidence. He comes mm-hmm. back and said, my son think he hit an object.
Oh, my son think he hit an object.
Yeah, and you know, if you run over something, you know when it's a human body. And you know, if your windshield is smashed, not only do you know it's a human body, you know that there is a chance that you cannot be hitting someone if they keep going for fear that if they catch your ass,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be in serious trouble. So
okay.
he hits a black man, kept going, and didn't even stop to get the police report for a damaged windshield. You're going to stop your car, supposedly, if that was a normal tell of the truth, you're going to stop your car and see just what was that object that smashed your windshield.
That smashed your windshield. you don't just keep driving, kind of look in your rearview mirror, check your car for damage if it's damage.
He had a smashed windshield. Mm-hmm. That's a major defect in your car. Certainly, that now you're driving without proper visibility.
Yes, exactly. That's
so it was clear that this car had backings from the DA. The thugs that chased after Michael Griffin, they were yelling nigger and all that, but the tragedy is that Sharpton was involved. But thanks be to God, there was also Attorney Automatics.
Oh, he was involved in that case as well.
Yeah, and Automatics eclipsed Sharpton and was able to get special prosecutor.
Okay.
This is the first time in history where a lawyer could challenge the DA in getting a special prosecutor for such a heinous crime.
Okay.
And that's one of the reasons why Maddox is banned from the courtroom, because he took no mess from white supremacists. He would use the Constitution, and that he broke no laws, never held in contempt. Now, this young man out there on Staten Island, his mother is talking to the wrong people, raising the wrong questions, knocking on the wrong doors, and she's not going to get justice.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're speaking about this recent young man, Deshaun?
Yes,
or
Staten Island, because I saw the interview with the mother, and she doesn't look like she is aware that her son's rights was violated.
Okay, I'm agreeing.
And that he is indeed a victim of a hate crime.
Oh, my goodness.
A police woman who was retired, she said it was a hate crime.
Yes.
She helped heard him saying, nigga, this was a police woman.
This was the woman that also administered first aid, CPR to the young man. In fact,
yes.
Kimby, let me play her interview. Let me just share that one briefly with us, because, you know, our news person, Delta, she said that she hasn't been seeing this on the corporate media stations. I said, probably not, because they're trying to keep this hidden. So Kimby, let me pull this one up, because you have to hear this one. Okay, here we are.
It was Wednesday, about 4:15. I was sitting on my porch, and I saw three black kids running down my block, and six to eight white kids chasing after them. They stopped approximately by where it says Spartan Rosecliff on the pole there, and one of them grabbed themselves their private part and screamed down the block, "Crip mother effers, I'm gonna kill you." I look up this way, and one of the kids got caught by them all and got hit in the back of the head and smacked in the face. Then we start walking back up this way, and we saw a white car coming from Albert Court, coming around the corner, and as he's speeding around the corner, he screams, I don't know, to the kids in the car or someone that was on the street, "I got a gun, I'm going to shoot that." Then my sister sees a bunch of kids in the backyard, in my neighbor's yard. She sees the kid on the floor. She says, "I think there's something wrong. There's a bunch of kids in the backyard." I come down the stairs. A couple of kids come out from the side and say, "My brother's dying. My brother's dying. I think he's dead. He has asthma." So I yelled to my wife, "Get my pump." I went in the backyard and I started compressions. I did five compressions, told his friend to breathe for me because I have asthma, so I couldn't do the breathing. Got him awake after a couple of minutes. His eyes opened a little. He tried to say something. I told him, "I'm going to give you the pump. Breathe it in." I shot two puffs. That's what I normally take. That's normally what someone asthma takes. Right after that, his eyes closed. I felt for a pulse. No pulse again. I started compressions again. He was breathing again. I kind of sat him up on his friend's legs so he could breathe better. At that point, the cops came in and told everybody to put their hands up. So I, complied, put my hands up. EMS was like not far behind them, a couple of seconds, maybe a minute. behind them came in and took over. They laid the kid down and started compressions. After that, I left the yard. But later on, I found out from detectives that it was two gangs who were meeting to fight. I don't know the reason of the fight. I don't know where it started. I just know what I saw down this way and what I heard. You know, you're calling them Crips, you're calling them the N-word, and you're saying you're going to shoot and kill them. To me, in my opinion, that was racial. But according to them, it was two gangs that were meeting to fight, and I have no idea why.
Okay, so let's welcome in Featherlight and Icy Hot. Welcome in. That was the clip from the witness who witnessed poor little Deshaun McKenzie being chased. I personally, you know, and I just go with my intuition, I don't believe the young man was in a gang. I believe that the police are just trying to save that to call it gang killing so they don't have to investigate it.
That's
and
right.
Also, from my understanding, if
as
you
a
die...
hate crime.
And that too. And if you die as a victim of a quote-unquote gang killing, then the state is allowed to take your organs.
Wow.
So, see, I'm not believing none of this crap about this gang stuff. Mm-hmm. The boy was chased just as they always chase people up there in Staten Island, like they did Eric Gardner,
right.
Like they did the young man King B was just speaking about,
Michael
Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Griffin, and then you know, all of that. That's why I say with the story that Delta mentioned about the lady moving up to Illinois to try to get away from racism. Hell, they have just as much racism going on up in Illinois, Detroit, New York, and everywhere else. It's just as bad as in Texas, Mississippi, Georgia, Florida. It doesn't matter.
Brother Malcolm said anything south of the Canadian border is south.
Is the south. Is the
and
South, period, point blank.
Black people have not come to grips with the fact that we never had the best years of our lives was during the Reconstruction period. Those were the best years of our lives. The worst years of our lives was post-Reconstruction and pre-Civil Rights. We had no political, no legal protection during the Reconstruction period, and definitely we had it. We didn't have it after it was taken away from us to prevent a second civil war. You see, unless we studied the Reconstruction period and the Dred Scott decision, all we're doing is playing with ourselves, because black people are still not getting it. They've been targeted since we've been in this country. Irish, Italian, and Israeli, they didn't stop until they got political and legal protection. Our leadership, like Marcus Garvey, Dr. King, Adam Clayton Powell, they meant well, but there was none pushing for political or legal protection. And to have a movement through Congress erased from the Constitution still saying that we are 3/5. There are those whites who believe that we are subhuman.
But wasn't that what the Voting Rights was all about, the Voting Rights Act of 1964 during the height of the Civil Rights Movement, was to vote and to get people in office? And there have been so many, I mean, I thought they were very successful, Dr. King in particular, with that piece, and I guess Lyndon Baines Johnson signing that in. And then look at all the black mayors we had all over this nation. And then, what happened?
Well, what happened was Dr. King, Midwell, like I said before, Adam Clayton Powell, the other black elected officials, some were selected. What we're talking about, we never had leadership to clamor, instead of human rights, clamor for human rights. Malcolm said, if you have human rights, you automatically have civil rights. Because you are considered a human being. White folks, the late great Bill Jones, Dr. Bill Jones, he pastored for a number of years at the historic Bethany Baptist Church. He said, the white man can rationalize everything except race. You tell me that if the white man speaks legalese, or if he speaks bilingual, which is legalese and military law, or military science, legalese is natural law. Most white people believe in natural law. Military science is targeted since we've been in this country? Are we the most targeted people in this country?
Hey, Canty, King B, yeah. Let's bring it back around to this case, because this case is not being discussed.
No,
and
okay.
We need we need to
really. But and so let me ask you this: when and where did this all start? That the state could take your organs if you were gang related. That's a travesty within itself. You should never have that right taken away from you, whether you're a gang member or not. I don't understand the rationale. I know what they're doing, but I don't understand the rationale. I don't know how that one squeaked by everybody.
Is that
kind of across the nation in certain states? I know they were snatching out young boys' organs there for a long time, and that's what it was all about. Morticians were saying they were showing up from the morgue over there.
Yeah.
I know in Missouri, body stuff with cavity stuff with newspaper instead of their organs. Their organs had already been removed.
Black Rose. Black Rose.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Hold on a second. Hold on. Hang on, Ken. Scott is trying to chime in.
Yes, this story personally touches me because this happened to me. Obviously, I didn't die from asthma, but when I was 11 years old, living in Detroit, me and two of my older cousins, they weren't no more than 5 years older than me, so they were probably 14, 15 years old. So my cousin, one of my cousins lived like 5 miles away. All right, and so we was gonna walk from my other cousin's house to his house, and so we had to cut through this predominantly white neighborhood. While on our way, I found a box on the street. I kicked the box and a hat fell out the box. It was a baseball hat, brand new, lying on the street. All right, so I take the hat out the box and I put it on my head. So then we come past this baseball field with these white kids out there practicing. And then they start pointing at us, talking about I stole their hat. And then the whole entire team, including the three adults, white men, started chasing us in the same way. And we got split up, and I ran to this school, and I was beating on the door, and this white teacher came to the door, and then by that time, a couple of them had caught up with me, and I begged that woman to let me in. And she came out and asked what was going on. And then, you know, they were saying, oh, he slapped this little white girl, so we gonna get him. And so so she let me stay in the building until they left. And then I seen my cousins came looking for me, and I was able to join back up with them. So that could have been me at 11 years old.
It could have been you. Right. It could have been you.
Well, I was going to say, what's happening with that now? There's no leadership. This poor mother, she is not going to get the proper legal protection that could bring her some justice. An eyewitness who should be protected, because strange things happen with that now if you go against the grain of these rogue cops out there.
Staten Island, that's across the country. Them boys got a hookup that will take you all over this nation, and who knows, maybe even further beyond this nation. This is not Staten Island. This is Minnesota. This is everywhere. This is called the neo-Nazi arm of the police department. It's pretty damn organized.
The military arm of the state, indeed.
Well, as far as Staten Island is concerned, it is the kingpin. Where a man says 11 times, I can't breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Seen around the world, went viral. The man who did the video, Ramsey Orta, he and his wife was never the same when the police began harassing them, shining spotlights in their house. He's arrested several times for revenge. And we're talking about a place where blacks and Latinos stay on one side of the island and the whites on the other side of the island. And the sad thing about the poor mother, she will not get the proper legal defense that could help her win the victory, because there's no automatics out there to fight the fight for getting justice. Everybody wants to look. They still get a look at the Sharpton. The man is bankrupt. He is the emperor with no clothes. He has nothing for black folks because he is all used up.
Well, who can direct this mother to the proper people that she would need in order to have these men prosecuted for murder?
It's a good question, and I wish I had the answer, because most of these lawyers that are black, forget the white ones, but most of these black lawyers, they are social parasites. I wish I had the answer, because we have no social engineers like Alton Maddox that can win. That's why all these young black men and women are in jail. They have no knowledge of their rights. And on Staten Island, you're isolated because there's only one way in and one way out. And that you have to depend on the ferry to get you into civilization. If you have a car, you take the Verrazano Bridge, which is way out of the way. But the tragedy with black folks in Staten Island, they are isolated and they have no legal protection to redress their grievance. She is a mother that's hurting, lost a son, a police woman who's retired. She saw the whole incident and she heard them yelling the racial epithet. She's played down by the police department saying, oh, no such thing. It didn't happen. Yeah, no such thing. So,
telling her, it was gang related, so don't worry about it.
You know, like,
you were trying to say a gang person.
Yeah.
If she insists upon telling her story further and pushing it out further, they'll start harassing her. That's how they operate.
Exactly. So, you know, I don't know of a lawyer that is willing to put his license on the line, holding up the Constitution, and is willing not to back down. You see, because most of these black lawyers are...
You would have to get a Jewish lawyer who has... as their social justice piece and relating.
There's very few Jewish lawyers that want to go up against NYPD. This man named is a Jewish lawyer. He never goes to the courtroom. What's his name? God, he works with Sharpton, but he is not known to be one to make serious waves, because there's already a done deal between him and Sharpton. They have an industry going where it's got to be a dead body. It's got to be a dead body.
In order for them to pick up the case?
Yes.
Are you saying?
Okay. Or not a dead body, but a case where it does.
High profile.
Like, yeah, it's not going to be sticky with the police having a chance to get over the top. But his name is Sanford Rubenstein. He works hand in hand with Sharpton, in tandem with Sharpton.
Well, King B, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we want to pick up on this Stanford case as well, where the young boy, the judge just saw fit to reduce his sentence. Mm-hmm. Once again, we have another affluenza case, so we'll be right back. Yes. I tell you, that white privilege is really something.
Hey.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium. The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium. Tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Jinx here with Complex News. For those that don't know, today's what would have been the 50th birthday of the late great Prince. The celebration of his life and contributions has continued since his untimely passing on April 21st of this year. Celebrations that include Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton officially declaring today Prince Day throughout the state Prince was born in. According to the official proclamation, which was signed into effect yesterday, Governor Dayton has asked residents to wear purple clothing in honor of the Purple One's enduring legacy. Hat tip to Governor Dayton, but for those of us that live elsewhere, we can look forward to the recently announced Prince tribute, which will take place at this year's BET Awards. For the celebration, they've gathered a gang of performers to take on the honor of paying homage to Prince, including his former drummer, Sheila E., The Roots, Janelle Monáe, D'Angelo, and more. Now, this won't be the first tribute to the Purple One set to take place on broadcast television. This past May, the 2016 Billboard Music Awards, the late artist was honored by Madonna, who covered his classics, Nothing Compares to You, and Purple Rain, where she was joined by Stevie Wonder. BET apparently wasn't feeling the work, and in a now-deleted tweet, they posted a promo video for this very tribute, which said, "Yeah, we saw that. Don't worry, we got you." Madonna clapped back, along with Questlove, who came to her defense, as well as the defense of anyone else who wants to provide a tribute for Prince. But with that kind of shade, BET had better come through with the tribute of all tributes at this year's BET Awards. You all can tune into the awards show airing live on Sunday, June 26th at 8 p.m. on BET. As always, subscribe to our YouTube for all the latest. For Complex News, I'm Jim.
Hey guys, Dave Wolf here. Well, it looks like Hillary Clinton is doing it, guys. She's going for the gold. Why? Because she just won the Democratic race. God dang it. Man, seriously, I thought Bernie Sanders was gonna win. What's up, America? Okay, so on Monday, Hillary Clinton managed to grab 2,383 delegates who pledged their support all the way to her. No, guys, vote for Bernie Sanders. But you know what? This came also after she just stole a bunch of wins for, like, New Jersey, New Mexico, and South Dakota. Now, when she won, she did make a speech to the people of Brooklyn saying tonight's victory is not about one person. It belongs to the generations of women and men who've struggled and sacrificed to make this moment possible. Sacrifice? I didn't know that going to vote was a major sacrifice, except for maybe sacrificing your free time. But either way, look out, Donald Trump, because she's coming for you next. Now, Hillary Clinton, who I like to call Hilarious Clinton's campaign, is pretty solid. Because although Bernie still wants to fight, she has more than doubled the advantage than Obama did back in 2008. And that was pretty impressive. But as for Bernie, he's saying, yeah, she may have a victory, but he's going to fight all the way to the nominating convention in Philadelphia, even though the party officials are telling him to concede. Come on, Bernie, you can do it, buddy! Anyways, guys, thanks for watching. My name is Dave Wobble. It's been awesome hanging out with you guys. Be sure to check out our...
All right, and yesterday was Prince's birthday, so happy born day to Prince. Welcome in, Delta Cougar.
Hey, Delta.
Hey. How everybody doing tonight?
Delta,
we're doing very well, very well. Oh, wait a minute, Delta. Before you get started with your hot topics, let me play this clip about the young man, the rapist. I'm not even getting ready to dignify him with young man. The rapist up in up at Stanford University. Stanford. Let me find it.
Brock Turner only gets 6 months in prison as a convicted rapist. One would think that someone convicted of 3 counts of sexual assault will get a substantial amount of time in prison. But Brock Turner will get out of prison before the year is out, with not much more than a slap on the wrist. For those that are just finding out, Brock Turner, a Stanford University swimmer, was caught raping an unconscious woman behind a dumpster. The woman didn't even know she was assaulted until after she woke up and heard about it in the papers. Turner pleaded not guilty to 5 counts of sexual assault. Some of these charges included attempted rape, rape of an unconscious person, and rape of an intoxicated person. He said that he was hooking up with her at a party, and he only fondled her, despite being caught and chased by 2 graduate students in the act. Why would an innocent person run? Oh right, because they don't. This guy was found guilty and he only got 6 months in prison, though the maximum sentence was 10 years. The judge argues that he came to that decision because he had a clear criminal record and a harsher punishment would have a severe impact on him. What about the severe impact that he had on the woman he raped? The conviction has sparked outrage all over America with a petition to remove the judge who was assigned to his case from the bench. The most terrible part of this whole thing, if this guy knows that he can get off with only 6 months of prison time for raping someone, what's to stop him from doing it again. Yo, I know that once he's convicted, the charges will be much worse if he's a repeat offender, but he should still be punished more severely for this awful crime. Thank goodness, it seems that Stanford does not approve of this ruling and has banned him from the campus and offered support to the victim. Alright guys, that is all for now. Thank you for tuning into IL. My name is Charlotte. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and I'll see you.
All right, so the boys sentenced Delta. Here we have another affluenza case.
Yeah.
The judge said that it would just be too severe for him to have to serve time in jail. And see, the case is the judge in this case is also a Stanford alumni. And so he used that prejudice to reduce that boy's sentence. And that should not That should not be allowed. He was biased, rather. That should not be allowed. He's supposed to uphold the law. This boy wasn't even sentenced to the minimum. If anything, the judge should have sentenced him to the minimum. If you want to show favor to a fellow Stanford student, and see, the father also amped up this campaign for everybody to stand behind his son. And that's why I said the same thing about that mother. See, these people, affluent people, they know how to use their resources work the system. And that's why it needs to be some type of way that some true people, not the Al Sharpton, but some real sincere people can help these parents when they're going through situations like this. Because this boy was allowed to get off because their father got a campaign together, organized some people to write letters and all this, in support of this rapist, and this boy got off so good. Damn near the victim girl, she almost praising a darn boy. So it's crazy. It is insane. The boy plays lacrosse, and I think the judge used to be on the lacrosse team, and all of this madness. So
and
now
the daddy set up a GoFundMe. To fund his son's legal fees.
I don't blame him. I would too.
You also have to understand that this is a good example as to how racism can affect white folks.
Absolutely.
In a way that they're not ready to be prepared to know that you can't get justice when a privileged white boy can use the court, the law, the legal system, and get sympathy. That word affluenza, it kicks in, and you see the sexism is still alive and well when a woman claims she's raped, and she didn't know she was raped, but the physical evidence that was on her body, the very idea that these two witnesses, brave witnesses, saw what he did, and they chased him down and helped him until the police came. This judge, he should recuse himself because he had a conflict of interest. He's an alumni of Stanford University. All right, so he's going to protect the image of that college. Forget that woman's situation that she went through. It's humiliating and degrading, and it's a capital crime. And she'll never be the same. She's ruined for life. But no one cares about this woman. And see, that's why I say rape has no respect of color when it's a woman. But unfortunately, if it's a black woman, she claims she's raped by white men, like Tawana Brawley, a black woman jumped all over her, taking the white man's word that she lied. And black women who should know, especially women who are lawyers, should know the law. If the police find that you lied about your claim that you was attacked by rape, they can charge you with falsifying a police report, and that's 5 years. They wouldn't have dared charge Tawana Brawley because they knew she would have had subpoena power, and her lawyer, advisor to her attorney, Alton Maddox, would have turned the tables. The former Attorney General, Robert Abrams, he knew that. So what they did, he just let the media take over and like sharks in the water, said that she lied, it was a hoax and all that. But no one bothered to raise the question, including our black sisters who should know, who are lawyers, raised the question, if it was a hoax, then why wasn't one of Brawley charged with falsifying a police report? Plus, her case involves a homicide. So, you know, like, racism goes very much against the will of white women. If she claims she's raped by white men, and this white boy was privileged to have the judge to subvert the system and gave this boy a slap on the wrist. That's all it was, a slap on the wrist. And she
it's
got
that.
And where's now? Where's now?
Right.
You know, we're talking about one of their own who's mm-hmm. I mean, on a rape behind a dumpster that she's unconscious.
Right.
I mean,
and
like,
he tried to lie and say that it was consensual until the two boys rode up on the bike and pulled his tail off of the girl.
Yes.
And she didn't, according to her, she really didn't even know she had been raped until I think she saw right up in the paper.
She will have no sympathy from a system that is corrupt, sexist, and for blacks, racist, because, to see, like I said before, it can be very costly for women who are trying to get justice. And the justice system can raise the blindfolds and see, oh, it's a white woman who have no serious weight behind her, including the NOW organization. They went AWOL. So you got no one pushing for you. There's no rallies pushing for you to get justice, and you're out there on your own. They put out there, oh, she was drunk. And what's a woman, who a respectable woman, doing drunk? In the kind of situation that she just let herself get into. See, they always question the woman's morals, but the idea that she was victimized by a low-life sleaze bag that knew, like a rat was looking for a hole, he found a hole thanks to his father.
Well, you know what, I have to say this now, and I'm not trying to blame the victim at all, but I do have to say this, just in the same vein. I understand, because I've been to college and college parties, and I understand that we like to go to these parties and have a good time. But when things like this are continuously happening,
yes.
Parents, please tell your children, do not go to a party and drink so much that you pass out.
Thank you.
You can't even enjoy yourself. So why do you drink that much?
You can't even allow yourself to let someone else pour you a drink. You bring your own brown bag.
You better. These crazy people.
Hey, because you see, that girl was targeted. I'm sure if she was looking at
they could have put something in her drink. That's
of
true.
Of course.
They
could have
all
sure
been set up like you said, Canty. She could have been targeted. But the point of the matter is, this rapist had his sentence reduced by the judge because of white privilege. That is the point that needs to be made. That is the narrative. That is what it is.
Thank you.
And so what do we do about this? Because you have young men going to jail for stealing bread, for standing outside, for disrupting a classroom, for sitting outside, people getting killed walking in Walmart with toy guns.
Mm-hmm.
But this boy can rape somebody and only receive 6 months.
6 months.
So, Delta, you want to bring some hot topics?
I was going to come in on that because, you know, also back here, a black boy is going to be sentenced where him and two more of his friends, which is a white boy and two more black boys, and they was accused. They was on the football team, and they was accused of raping the girl, raping a girl, and now he's going to be sentenced. And they said he's going to get 15 years to 25 years.
Oh, God.
Hey,
well, see,
now look at
that mother needs to contact that family. But also remember the case, and I can't remember this young man's name, but he actually was convicted of rape and served time, and the girl came out like 10 or 15 years later and said she lied.
Imagine that.
And he was finally released.
That can happen now.
Well, that was always the basis for lynching. That
Thank
was like Ida B. Like Ida B. Wells said,
you
that was the threat-bearing lie that the white woman was raped.
That's all
they needed to say. No proof, none of that.
The lynch mob didn't
jury
care if they
executioner.
The lynch mob, they didn't care if they got the right person. As long as he was black, he was hanged.
No, absolutely.
And it goes on and on and on. Black women cannot have that privilege to have black men go out there and search for white men and get justice for a black woman, because black men are scared to protect their women. They don't dare go out to protest, and not only protest, but to let it be known that we will defend this woman all the way to the end. Look how many blacks came out early on for Tonya Braun. But as time went on, they left her out in the cold, and she's still out in the cold today.
Yeah. Okay, Cancer, let's let Delta bring her hot topic.
Okay, because I want to comment too. I mean, I'm going to get to my hot topic, but I was thinking, I was going to give you an example. Like, my boy lived in Minnesota, and it was predominantly, it's 2% black, that's all. It's predominantly white. And my son, he was dating this white girl, and he wanted to quit the girl to go he had hooked up with another black girl, but he wanted to quit the white girl. The white girl was so upset because my son had quit her. She told police that my son had raped her, was trying to rape her, something my boy told me. And he told me, he said, Mama, he said, and they was going to try to charge me for that. He said, he told the man, my son said, he told the police, I don't have to rape nobody. I ain't never had a problem getting a woman, and sure enough, he haven't. And what he did, he got the white girl to call him. He told the police officer, he said, let me call her right here on my phone. He said, I want you to listen. And my son said, he called the white girl, and said, the white girl said, she told him, said, I told you I was going to get you dinner. I told you. And the police heard her. And that's how my son got out of it, because the police, first they were going to hang him, but then when my son sat there and let the police hear him talk to the girl, and the girl got mad because my son wanted to break up with her. And so you got some people that will tell lies, but when it's a black boy, all you got to do is allege it. You get what I'm saying? So not only allege, this man was caught red-handed. And the guy said he was grinding on the woman, said he was grinding on her. And this woman was
raping her.
Cold. Yeah.
Yes, he was raping her.
She was out cold. Out cold. And the guy is from he's from Britain. He's over here going to school, and he said the night on they had him on Fox News, and he said that's very rare in their country for a man to rape somebody. It's very rare. He said, but over here, he said, I don't mean no disrespect, over here it's kind of prevalent. He said, but over where he come from, it's kind of rare. And so, let me get on to my hot topic, but I just said they got two sets of laws. They got a set of laws for the poor, and they got a set of laws for the middle class, and they got a set of laws for the unprivileged and white privilege. So, that's just what I think. Okay, moving on to Georgia. There was an 82-year-old black woman. Her and her daughter went to the grocery store, and they was going back to their car, and they couldn't hardly get, the girl couldn't hardly get her mother in the car. You know, with old people, it takes a little longer. So the girl was trying to get her mother in the car and assisting getting her mother in the car. And a white man got so angry because and I'm telling y'all this, a lot of this is stemming from Donald Trump with all this hatred. And I'm telling you, this is
the truth. You know it.
And this white man, he got so angry because the black folks wouldn't move out of his way. He began to call her racial slurs and ram the back of their car. Because they didn't move out of his way fast enough. And this is in Georgia.
So what happened?
Just ridiculous. In Georgia.
Was he arrested?
Yes, he was arrested, yes. All the witnesses in the parking lot verified the statement, and he was arrested. But the girl said he needed to be charged with a hate crime because he was calling them racist slurs.
Right, that's right. And if the police...
He was calling them racist slurs, so the girl's mother wanted him charged with a hate crime. Wanted him charged with a hate crime.
Uh-huh.
And they hadn't charged him with a hate crime. They just arrested him, you know, for the crime, but not, they didn't take it to the next level.
Yeah. All those black pastors down there, all those black lawyers down there, listen to this case.
82 years old.
And I'm sure if she goes to someone's church and her own pastor has ran for the tall grass, most of these black pastors, they run for the tall grass, they know their place, and they're not about to upset white supremacy. This is the tragedy with these black pastors. They make a mockery of what it is, and they said they are ambassadors for Christ. They don't want to stand up. Dr. King, I believe sometimes he died for nothing, because most of these black pastors have morphed to become ecclesiastical pimps, and there's nothing happening. They don't dare rock the boat against white supremacy. They ain't doing it.
Okay, and then our next story, we have a story where this is in your town, Canton, and but this is a good story though. This is in New York City. There was a black man who is 67, and he has spent the majority of his life in prison. He has spent over 35 years in prison, and he got into the drug game as a young boy, and he began to just do drugs and sell drugs and all type of stuff. But the last time he went to prison, and I'm telling this story because you never get too old to turn your life around, and he's 67. While he was in prison, he decided to turn his life around. And he started going and taking classes. See, and this is the key. If you want people to turn their life around, you got to put them into programs while they are in jail. And he got into this program, and he began to go to school and get his GED and, you know, just turn around. So then when he got out, he went to this halfway house. And he started going and counseling people about drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But the man realized this was his true calling, to counsel. So the man went back to school and got a master's degree. And he turned around and he got two or three more degrees at the age of 67. And this is a black guy in New York City.
And
so what he was in New York City, you heard of that? You heard about it?
Yeah, he graduated from McEvers College, I think it is.
Yeah, yes. And and they was just talking about how he said when he began to counsel, he realized this was his true calling. This was something, and he was telling the young man, "You never get too old," and he had became a sought out counselor for people ask for him. He's very good at what he do because he have been down this road. But all his life, he said all his life, you know, he was on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided
turn
the
his
last
life
time
around.
Turn his life around. So we wanna say to the black young men, the black women who are listening to us tonight, you never get too old to turn your life around. So he is one of the counselors that everybody seeks after for him to counsel them. So that tells you how good he is.
Yeah.
You see, and when you're dealing with white supremacy, apartheid, it is not in their interest to help young black men in particular out of their jungle. We are all journeying through a jungle. But when it comes to young black men, they are targeted for their own destruction. And they encourage in their heads at an early age, you are never will be anything. You never was anything or worthwhile. And now you must play the role of a loser. So they don't show from the, they say from the classroom to the jail cell. The pundits have already got the jail cell for these young black boys who are bored with school. A lot of them are very brilliant, and a brilliant child can get bored easily. But they have no concern about helping these young people, especially young black men, to get stay on the good foot. There's no PAL, which stands for Police Athletic League. Years ago when I was growing up, the PAL had police officers taking time out with young people to help them keep their nose clean, showing young boys how to play basketball. You know, especially the cop didn't live in the community, so they were obliged to be working with the young people, especially when they lived in the housing projects. You had the police officer who knew the people on the grounds of the housing projects. All right, so there's no more CPR, no more customer service. It's all the idea, the bigger
it's
idea.
All hatred now. It's
yes,
hatred to destroy the black man.
And
because the black man is the seed.
As many arrests as they can get of a young black male, this all the more helps that cop get his promotion. And they don't care about helping young black men in particular. See, no one wants to hire young black American men. They'll hire a Pakistani, Indian, Caribbean. A lot of blacks in the Caribbean are coming here to do two things: make money and hate black Americans. They consider black
Americans.
You
know what, Kent? Into that, I say that is one reason why either you have to be an entrepreneur, or we have, or you have to connect and find jobs with black entrepreneurs, people that will hire you, because we have to stop expecting our oppressors to educate us and to employ us. It is time out for that.
Well, this is the reason why blacks, when they first voted for Obama, they thought he was going to be the catalyst to begin working on that. Obama did more for the gays than he ever thought about doing for blacks. When the gay rights bill was passed, what did he do? He had the White House flooded with the gay colors on the outside of the White House.
Well, you know what? This reminds me of a conversation I had with one of my best friends, and I remember when Obama was elected, and I said, man, if you can't make it with a black president in office, then you just can't make it. And my best friend said, what about just making it anyway, whether we have a black president or not? I said, damn, you know what? You are so right about that. You know, why do we need, why did I feel the need that, oh, my God, yeah, with this black president, oh, my God, my life is going to be so better, so much better, it's going to be better. I mean, I'm in control of my destiny. Not Obama. He can't do anything for me. Personally, me myself.
Well, I don't know. I don't. Hey. Executive Order 13603, y'all. Ask Google to show you what that's all about, and that's on YouTube. Scroll down to see Dick Gregory explaining and discussing Executive Order 13603, y'all.
Mm-hmm.
Obama has a trick up his sleeve that most blacks alone don't realize. This man here, I always said, was a modern-day Manchurian candidate, and we don't have a clue as to what this dude is up to.
And many don't want to have a clue, King B. But we're up at a break, King B, so let's take a break, and then let's come back with the Baylor sex scandal, as well as this Stanford sex scandal, because this is just ridiculous.
It is something.
And it's not like it's anything new. And I hate to say it, this sex scandal, one of the sex scandals, rather, in that's taking place at Baylor, there's a young black boy involved. And I'm like, you know what? Now, why you run around here getting yourself accused of raping some white girls? Why would you do that? Oh, my God. Please teach your children. Teach your children. You listen to the Lotus Place. Let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
No, I'm not a writer.
Okay. Talk Radio since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
I want to end on another issue. In California, Black Lives Matter activist Jasmine Richards faces up to 4 years in prison at her sentencing today after she was convicted of a rarely used statute in California law, known up until recently as felony lynching. Police accused her of trying to de-arrest someone during a peace march in Pasadena last August. The arrest and jailing of a young black woman activist on charges of felony lynching has sparked a firestorm of protests, with supporters vowing to pack the court today. Kevin DeLeo, your president pro tem of the California Senate, your thoughts?
Well, listen, I'm not familiar with the legal details of this case, but nonetheless, I think that perhaps prosecutors have been a little too harsh or extremely harsh with regards to the prosecution or the years that they're trying to give this activist from Black Lives Matters. The reality is that Black Lives Matters, whether people concur or not concur with them, they have brought to light many of the abuse issues that young African Americans, Latinos, and other minorities, people of color, have endured, have been faced historically, not just in California, but throughout the nation. Perhaps the prosecutors are being overly harsh. Again, I want to underscore, I don't know the legal details of this prosecution. I'm aware of the general prosecution, but it seems like it's much, much, much too harsh.
And Los Angeles City Councilmember Gil Cedillo, that she would be charged under this law originally set up so that if, a mob pulled away, actually for African Americans against lynching, pulled away a person from police, that they would be held accountable for felony lynching. And yet it's now being used against this young black woman.
Again, I also don't know the details of the case, but it does seem wholly inappropriate. Think about this, Amy. You started your show talking about someone from Stanford who rapes a woman and gets 6 months, and then you've got a woman who's part of the Black Lives Movement who's trying to bring forth the challenges that face us in America around racism and racial discrimination. And she's participating, trying to exercise her First Amendment rights, whatever people think about the tactics, and she's going to be given 4 years. Something's wrong with that picture.
We're going to have to leave it there. Kevin DeLeon, President Pro Tem of the California State Senate, Gil Cedillo, Los Angeles City Council Member. Thanks.
Brock Turner only gets 6 months in prison as a convicted rapist. One would think that someone convicted of 3 counts of sexual assault will get a substantial amount of time in prison. But Brock Turner will get out of prison before the year is out, with not much more than a slap on the wrist. For those that are just finding out, Brock Turner, a Stanford University swimmer, was caught raping an unconscious woman behind a dumpster. The woman didn't even know she was assaulted until after she woke up and heard about it in the papers. Turner pleaded not guilty to 5 counts of sexual assault. Some of these charges included attempted rape, rape of an unconscious person, and rape of an intoxicated person. He said that he was hooking up with her at a party, and he only fondled her, despite being caught and chased by 2 graduate students in the act. Why would an innocent person run? Oh, right, because they don't. This guy was...
We're turning now to our last segment. We go to Santa Fe, New Mexico, where former President Bill Clinton found himself in an unlikely 30-minute debate with a 24-year-old Bernie Sanders supporter last week. Bill Clinton was campaigning for Hillary Clinton, of course, when he stopped at a Mexican restaurant in Santa Fe. There, he met Josh Brody, who questioned him about his presidential record from welfare reform to the deregulation of Wall Street to government spending. To find out what happened, we're joined by Josh Brody, graduate of the New School here in New York, who questioned Bill Clinton in Santa Fe. What happened? What did you ask? And were you satisfied with President Clinton's responses, Josh?
Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for having me. Well, no, I wasn't satisfied with the responses. What I had asked about was aid to families with dependent children, the Commodities Future Modernization Act, and Gramm-Leach-Bliley. In addition to his overall government spending.
And let me ask you,
the reason I was unsatisfied.
Josh, can I ask how you ended up being in the restaurant with President Clinton?
Sure. Well, I'm just home visiting my parents for the week, and this is a restaurant 5 minutes from my house. He made an unannounced campaign stop, and I actually didn't notice him in the restaurant until maybe 30 seconds before he approached my table.
So continue with the issues that you raised in his responses.
Well, so one of the reasons I wasn't satisfied with his answers is because he rooted a lot of them in economic data. He would talk about how the African-American unemployment rate reached its lowest point under his administration and how median household wages peaked in 1999. But there's two problems with that. First is both of the statistics are misleading. Wages peaked in part because people were working more hours. In fact, the average median hourly wage has been basically flat since the 70s. And then in terms of another often cited statistic that both he and his and Hillary Clinton have used on the campaign trail is that African American unemployment was at record lows. But as authors such as Michelle Alexander show, that's because African Americans were being arrested in record high numbers. And if you look at the unemployment rate, including the prison population, it actually wasn't all that low. The other thing I found shocking, though, if I may, about this was what I had asked him about originally was aid to families with dependent children, which was our welfare legislation at the federal level, that he basically gutted. And when I asked him about it, and I shouldn't have been so surprised, because the bill was called the Personal Responsibility and Work Opportunity Act, personal responsibility being the operative phrase. He kept invoking a culture of dependency argument, similar to what you will hear anyone from Ronald Reagan talk about when he discusses the mythical welfare queen, to Paul Ryan when he talks about dependency in our inner cities. It's a racially coded argument, and he was blowing into that dog whistle very hard. And his essential argument, and I was really surprised to hear this, I would have thought he'd changed the rhetoric over the last 20 years, but his essential argument was that poor people are lazy, and if you give them welfare, they'll be dependent on the government, and that he was told this by people on welfare, and therefore it needed to be cut and turned into block grants for the states. There used to be 68 out of every person below the poverty line, out of every 100 people below the poverty line on welfare, we're now at 26. And I had responded that maybe the reason people don't have jobs isn't because they're lazy, but because there simply aren't jobs. And his administration had moved away from the notions of the government interfering in the economy to improve the lives of the people, such as the federal jobs programs that came under FDR. Bill Clinton essentially ripped the heart out of the Democratic Party and abandoned that notion that the government can make the lives of its people better and should invest in a robust social safety net. So that's how the discussion started. It went many other places.
Josh Brody, as we wrap up right now, you were talking to President Clinton about his policies. How do you feel about Hillary Clinton?
I mean, she's in many ways responsible. I think it's a little hypocritical for people to say that it was his administration and not hers, given that she was known for the transformative role of the First Lady, where she was more involved than any other First Lady. So I do not deny her agency. I think she's culpable for all of the policies we discussed, whether it's shrinking the government, getting rid of welfare, allowing corporations to have more powered offshore jobs through NAFTA, the deregulation of Wall Street, which, by the way, deregulating derivatives occurred just a few months before her Senate campaign. She then received a lot of Wall Street donations. And then I also object to her record in the Senate, where she again would deregulate Wall Street and was actually more hawkish in her votes in terms of foreign policy than the Clinton administration, although I would disagree with his foreign policy as well. So overall, I'm very disappointed, and I plan to vote for Jill Stein because I believe New Mexico will win by double digits. However, if the race does seem close, unfortunately, I will have to vote for her, which is not something I'm happy about.
Josh Brody, I want to thank you for being with us. Sounds like a very interesting half hour you had when you went to heaven.
Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein did an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. And in one of the questions, she was asked whether or not she thought that Hillary Clinton's policies were reflective of motherhood and feminism. And she went in on Hillary Clinton. She states, "So, to my mind, Hillary Clinton's predatory policies are the antithesis of motherhood and parenting community values I would hope to see in the White House. Hillary Clinton's track record destroyed the social safety net of aid to families with dependent children. hurting the kids, families, and communities left without support. Supporting the policies of Walmart as a board member, overseeing poverty wages and lousy benefits hurt hundreds of thousands more. Supporting Wall Street deregulation and coddling bankers led to foreclosures for 5 million families and forced 9 million breadwinners into unemployment. Promoting fracking in the U.S. and around the world polluted and stressed the water supplies for communities across the globe. Supporting regime change in Iraq, Libya, and Honduras, killing over 1 million people is another assault. Okay, the conclusion so far is that Jill Stein has no chill. Because she is laying into Hillary Clinton. And look, she's right. Every single thing that she's saying here is factual. It's substantive. Hillary Clinton has done things that would make us believe that she is not liberal. She is a Democrat in name only. But again, as I've stated in the last episode, I believe that that title, Dino, doesn't even hold weight anymore because the entire party has moved to the right to defend Hillary Clinton. Case in point, in 2012, Barney Frank was talking about how with Citizens United and how there's an unlimited stream of money in politics, you'd have to be the only person in the world to think that you're not influenced by money. And now he's defending the fact that Hillary Clinton is taking millions from special interests in Wall Street. So I guess that Hillary Clinton is the only person in the world who is not influenced by money, right, Barney Frank? So look, it is the case that Hillary Clinton is not a good Democratic candidate, but Jill Stein continues. Let's get back to what she said, because it's great. Hillary Clinton is widely thought of as an advocate for children, women, and families. She is celebrated as a proponent of equal pay for women and an important advocate for the Children's Health Insurance Plan. In my view, these achievements take a backseat to her history as a director of the anti-labor Walmart Corporation, a proponent of ending aid to families with dependent children, an opponent of a 60 cents an hour minimum wage in Haiti, an opponent of single-payer universal health care, and an advocate for regime change and violence in Iraq, Libya, and Honduras. I'd like to see a woman in the White House who understands we share mothering parenting in an interdependent human family. Whether we are biological parents or not, we are all connected to the younger generations as if they are our own. So look, what she's saying here resonates directly with me. This is called the Humanist Report. This is the humanist stance that she's taking. It's not the case that we care just about, you know, Americans. It's not the case that we care about our own close family. We care about people in the world. We're all human beings. We all have the same interests. We're all driven by the goal to pursue happiness and fulfill our interests. And so it's really frustrating when you have these politicians where they make decisions and they don't care about the consequences abroad. So if you choose to invade Iraq by voting for this illegal war, well then, your actions are conducive to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. And that's so frustrating. I don't think that anyone who calls themselves a liberal or certainly a progressive should be doing these types of things. And look, she's apologized for her vote for the Iraq War, but she hasn't learned her lesson. She still wants a Syrian no-fly zone. What happens if you have that? You tell Russia you're not allowed to fly over this area in Syria, and if you do, we're going to shoot down your planes. That's going to lead to escalating tensions between Russia, which could potentially trigger another Cold War, or maybe war. She supported a coup in Honduras. Look, the point is that Hillary Clinton is not a liberal, and Jill Stein is right to point this out. So my hat goes off to Jill Stein here. This is absolutely true, and the problem is that we allow Hillary Clinton to get away with this stuff because she is part of the Democratic Party, because she's better than the Republicans. But when you do that, you allow the Democratic Party to take advantage of you. If you support them no matter what, then they're going to think, well, you know what? We can do whatever we want. We can move to the right because our supporters know that the Republican Party is worse. So that's why they do this. That's why they move to the right. That's why the DNC chair, Debbie Do Anything for Hillary Wasserman Schultz, is teaming up with Republicans to attack Elizabeth Warren's agency that protects people from these predatory payday lenders. So in the end, Jill Stein is 100% right, and I applaud her for this response.
Baylor University fired its head football coach today and demoted its president, Kenneth Starr. The shakeup follows a legal review that found the Baptist University mishandled several cases of sexual assault involving football players. Here's Anna Werner.
The report faulted Baylor for a wholly inadequate response, saying the university failed to take appropriate action to respond to reports of sexual assault reportedly committed by football players. It said two university administrators directly discouraged complainants from reporting, and in one case even retaliated against someone who reported a sexual assault. The university responded today by stripping the title of president from Kenneth Starr, who was the one-time special prosecutor who led President Clinton's impeachment trial involving White House intern Monica Lewinsky. And they fired football coach Art Briles. Briles is credited with turning around the football program, but today some are questioning at what cost. Baylor Board Chairman Richard Willis apologized during a teleconference.
We're deeply sorrowful about these events. We're just horrified by the extent of the acts of sexual violence on our campus.
At least six women have accused eight Baylor football players of violence.
It is not enough.
Jasmine Hernandez sued Baylor in March, claiming after she was raped, the school ignored her pleas for counseling and justice. The player who assaulted her is now serving a 20-year sentence.
Hiding these very egregious acts of crime only allows them to continue further and to continue repeatedly.
Kenneth Starr remains Baylor's chancellor and a tenured law professor, but Charlie, Baylor told reporters on that teleconference call that he will no longer have any operational responsibilities.
Thanks, Anna.
Okay, so that was the news update.
Ooh,
yeah, I know that was a lot. That's quite a bit. So let's just review, and I want to hear your thoughts. 641-715-3660 is the number to dial. 641-715-3660. Participant code 549032. Press pound and press star 61 if you would like to speak. So I had to share that little election piece. Also, I just love that young man's debate with Bill Clinton. I wish I could just hear the entire debate. And
right. That's
one thing I love with Bernie Sanders supporters. They are informed on the issues, and they can lay it out. But I tell you, when you ask these Hillary supporters, all they can say is, she's done a lot for people.
Yeah.
And it stops there.
That's it.
It stops there.
Like a programmed robot.
I'm like, okay. Like what, take away the aid to dependent families? Okay, I mean, they did that in Arkansas and then just took it nationally. So, I mean, really? And what else? Oh, send a lot of people to prison. Oh, yeah. Okay. And that, you know, and I had completely forgotten about this whole fracking issue, which fracking, that's environmental. And see, that's why so many of these little young people and these environmentalist people are so against Hillary and they're so for Bernie.
That's right.
I completely forgotten about that. And that fracking could have led to what's going on in Flint,
constantly destroying
the environment.
I mean, you imagine a governor that from Hillary on down, she goes to a black church, hustle a black church, and not once did she denounce the governor and demand he be arrested on site for conspiracy. This governor is a wanted man. And as far as Bill Clinton is concerned, we must never forget, while he was running for the presidency, his wife, Hillary, advised Erickson to go back to Arkansas to preside over a black man who was to be put to death named Highway Rick?
Rick something. I know who you're speaking of.
I'm sorry.
The young man didn't even realize he was being put to death.
Yes, he had shot himself in the head after shooting another person, and turned a sight pistol on himself, rendering him to have the mind of a third-year-old child. He got his last meal as the tradition, and he told the prison guards to watch his ice cream. He'll come back to get it later, not knowing he was doomed to go to his death.
Right. So they and should Bill not have Clinton, given him a death sentence.
No, here's the reason why Bill Clinton was hell bent on let this man be put to death. He had to show to white folks that he was not soft on blacks getting capital punishment.
Absolutely.
And that was the reason.
But you know what? Now look, this whole Baylor issue. Baylor University, the Baptist University, is here in Waco, Texas.
Uh-huh.
Baylor has been covering up these rapes, okay? And Kenneth Starr, who was the chancellor, as you heard
Imagine
in the report,
that. Imagine that.
Now, he was so gung-ho on having Bill Clinton impeached for this whole Monica Lewinsky sex scandal
crap. That's right. Here he is
right now covering up rapes and then discouraging people from reporting. Now, Mother Hattie, you have a women's organization. I would certainly like to hear you give some input on these campus rapes, and how do you think what should happen? I mean, do we need more people, more groups to speak out? What do we do?
Well, what we do, I mean, if those are going to be very high profile, they will get justice. But I say, what about all the black women? When you want to get away with something, do it to a black woman.
That's right. And it's
terrible, any kind of violence. I mean, you could even go up to New York. What was the guy's name that they vilified, the woman that he raped, who was the maid that came to deliver him something, and they just turned that all around. I mean, it's one after the next, one after the next.
This is not
uncommon. This is not unusual. If you have, let's just go on up to Penn State with the little boys that they raped. That's sexual violence.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
So we can go on and on and on and on about it. It is very, very commonplace in this country and around the world.
Mm-hmm. That was the Strauss-Kahn case, was that Dominique Strauss-Kahn.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Lest we forget. And listen, check this out now. The lawyer for the woman from Guinea, the victim, he threw his client under the bus because he was offered a deal to become the DA of Brooklyn. Ken Thompson, as quiet as he's kept, came from the Bronx and ingratiated himself with a well-known preacher named A.R. Bernard.
Well, see, that's the problem with all of this corruption in this country at this point.
Yes.
The sexual violence piece, I mean, I think, we can do something about it. Yes, we can, if we decide that everybody is valued, and then some are saying, well, this one's valuable, that one's not valuable, and you know, the police officer down in Oklahoma that was raping all these black women.
Yes.
He finally got a little bit of kickback from that. There was another one out in California. Well, guess what they allowed him to do? They had a woman called to, and I can't think of the name of this, but maybe you do, Black Rose. You have all that good stuff in your head all the time. Called the police to report the rape of a teenager, and I don't remember if it was a relative or something. The officer that came raped her. This woman, he raped her. Then she immediately went and reported it. Did this man get any jail time? They let him resign from his job and go on about his business.
Jeez.
Nothing on his record. Yeah. And if these people, but these are the people that they are hiring to, what do you call it, serve and protect.
What a mockery. What a mockery.
But these colleges have been doing that. The colleges have been doing that for years and years and years, and there needs to be a national campaign, as America has always done. America's always pointing its finger at some other country, Rio de Janeiro, whomever, about sexual violence and this and that, like this country is all of this panacea for this wonderfulness that happens here. Well, it isn't. It's just the same thing served up on a different dish.
Yes, it's just the idea that this thing called affluenza and these white boys are able to have the complexion for the connection, as Paul Mooney would say, the right complexion for the connection, and they can walk away scot-free of any serious ramifications for a capital crime. Rape is still considered a capital crime, but you get black men who don't have the connection because they got the wrong complexion. Black people never demanded much from the NAACP. When was the last time the NAACP litigated in court about these crimes that we're hearing about against black young men? And when was the last time you heard of the Congressional Black Caucus calling on the carpet this president who fought hard for the gays but don't do anything when black people are victimized by racism?
Yeah, and I'm going to take this rape thing back. This rape thing goes right back even to the military. There are women in the military being raped.
Please.
Mm-hmm. Black women at an alarming rate. I told our senator here about this story of the young woman who had gone, African American young lady, came up dead. You know, they're not raping just, and parents never knew what happened to her. But we know what happened. This is inside Iraq, over in Iraq when they kind of first started up. But you know, everywhere you look, the black woman is being raped in one fashion or another. If it's not actual sexual rape, there's some kind of other rape or degradation going on this,
yes,
you know, black woman's character.
And we go about our business as usual, not daring to offend white supremacy, white supremacists. And we are like sheep.
You think it's just daring, not white supremacy? I just think it's corruption. I think it's people get paid, people get jobs for it.
My sister.
People get all kinds of deals.
And
then they were afraid. I think it's a whole myriad of issues.
You can never see, if you don't understand the psychology of white supremacy, everything else you think you understand will confuse you. You must understand the enemy is always trying to play with our head and never to reveal what he has going up his sleeve, that we don't understand the nature of the beast. When you saw the Jaws 1, the police chief said when he saw Jaws come out of the water, what did he say? You better get a bigger boat. We're messing with the enemy of white supremacy in a dinghy, and we don't understand the psychology of white supremacy. The idea of Zionism as well.
Kenty, may I ask you a question before Black Rose go to break? Where did the white supremacy codes come from?
It was probably brought out when we lost our Reconstruction rights, because they introduced called the Black Code after we lost our Reconstruction rights. And even in the book by Du Bois,
you're talking about the Black codes of the 1800s. No, I'm not talking about that. Actually, white supremacist laws came into existence on this continent before there was a United States, when it was just 13 colonies. So what I'm saying is that white supremacist codes, meaning it started stripping black folks, free black folks, not enslaved black folks, but free black folks of their rights in the colonies, that came out of the Virginia 1665, but I'm not sure the exact date. I know it's in the 1600s. The Virginia Slave Codes is the first appearance of laws that implemented white supremacy. So I said all of that to say this: white supremacy is just a symptom of slavery. We have not abolished slavery in this country. Y'all talking about police officers and stuff, they ain't nothing. They started as slave catchers, and they still slave catchers. So,
my brother, that all might be true. But even in the 1700s, while blacks were still under slavery, you had a man named Prince Hall.
Every black was not under slavery.
I'm sorry?
All black people were not slaves. There was a
Prince Hall was a freed black man who wanted to start his own Masonic order. So he went to England to get permission to start his own Masonic order. He wasn't concerned about slavery with the masses that was doomed for life. He was only wanting to now elevate himself where he would be so recognized and so prominent with his own Masonic order.
That's what I think she was saying. That's what I think she was saying. She's not denying that white supremacy isn't an element, But she's saying it's also corruption, greed, and all of that. And you just gave a perfect example of a black man who didn't give a damn about nobody else but what he could do for himself.
There you go.
That's a problem.
Yeah, it is. And see, to this day, we are not holding these blacks who claim they're fighting for our rights, like your Congressional Black Caucus, your very well-off, many well-off younger pastors. Many of them, I know a pastor in my neighborhood who has a large following, told a focused young black man, I don't get involved in politics. And this man has at least 1,000 people on any given, he has two services, at least 1,000 people in his church.
It's a hard time. He probably was instructed, King B, to not get involved politically.
Well,
a lot of these pastors
learned from Dr. King's assassination. And the very idea, Dr. King kept these pastors on the up and up about being concerned about what's going on with their people. Don't be just concerned about your wheel, size of your wheelbase, or my church this, my church that, bragging about your church during the convention for the Black Baptists and the Methodists for their conferences. He was concerned about dealing with the issues of truly being concerned about the least of these. And a lot of these pastors, they have contemptuous attitude for those blacks that are not well connected. And if you're not well connected with a lot of these pastors, they look at you like you're some kind of a disease. So they ingratiate themselves with those members of the church that are your higher up prominent person. See, I detest that word prominent. When if you have the choice of being prominent or powerful, I'd rather be powerful. Like Adam Clayton Powell Jr., he was powerful. And he would not sell out.
King B, let's take a break. We're up for a break. Good. We'll take a break. You listen to The Lotus Place, and we'll be right back.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
The Black Talk Radio Network is made possible in part with help from the Black Talk Media Project, a North Carolina-based nonprofit engaged in the production and distribution of independent digital black media. Find out more by going to blacktalkradionetwork.com or blacktalkmediaproject.org and look for the menu tab, Crowdfunding Black Media. Black Talk Media Project, helping to provide you with new black media for the new millennium.
You are tuned in to Black Talk Radio, new black media for the new millennium.
Okay, and we're back here at the Lotus Place, and you can join in the conversation 641-715-3660, and the participant code is 549032. Press pound and then press *61 if you would like to share a comment. And also, we would love for you to go onto the Black Talk Radio Network page and donate to continue these radio shows brought to you live and in charge and in living color. So, Delta, you've been pretty quiet. Let me make sure you're still there. Do you have any more topics?
Yeah, I'm still here. And I was just listening, and I was thinking about a lot of the, I hate to say it though, but a lot of the white folks get a lot of this done by other black folks getting on board with them and keeping a lot of things from going forward to keep people from really moving up. That's just my opinion. I mean, I know that they always got to have someone to help them. And this is our problem. A lot of us can't get together. If we can all get on one accord, we can make it. But the problem is our people, we cannot get on one accord. That's our number one problem. Well, if we stand together, we can change a lot of things.
Well, see,
because we can hurt the white man really in his pocketbook because they love money.
How do you do this rape thing? What do you do with that? If we were all united, what would be the strategy? What could we do as a people to alleviate this corruption in this system of this molestation and raping?
Stop sending your daughters to these institutions. That's why I told my daughters I will not condone them going into the military, because I told them about all the rape and stuff that goes on in there. Uh-huh. Stop sending your children to these places where this kind of stuff happens.
And my brother, the reason why a lot of these young blacks are enticed to go into the military, they are told how they can get this college degree, how they can travel the world, and they had all this housing benefits and all, and they're suckered into that. But there's also the fine print that they don't tell these young black people about, especially young black women, and they're raping black men too.
Well, Canty, I spent 6 years in the military.
I don't know if they're going to put that in fine print, that you will be raped. The chances are very high.
No. Yes.
Black woman, you go to military, that you'll get raped, or even other women too, though, because
when I say the fine print, I mean they won't tell them about, we assume no responsibility if something unforeseen happened to you. You sign on the dotted line to serve your country. And they
Her name? Lavina Jones. I think it's Lavina Johnson.
Yes.
Lavina
Johnson. Her father's name is, I forget his name. John Johnson, I believe.
I
can't remember. And there's a documentary out to Silent. I can't remember Black Rose, but just look up Lavina Johnson. I had interviewed her father and her mother.
I did too. I interviewed her father and the other man that was working with them. I think his name is Michael something. I think he produced that documentary. He and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
The one that you're speaking about, discussing the military rapes, or the one particularly on Lavina Johnson. I haven't seen that one, I don't think.
Well, they talked about it all, though. The Johnson family didn't just focus on what happened to their daughter, but it caused them to become activists and to expose that this is all too common in the military.
Yes. And not just with women, but also with men as well.
Yes. Men of veterans have reported as being raped as well. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think the military may have a large problem of people getting raped in there, but also you got a lot of colleges too, and a lot of them is just not saying it. So me personally, I would never tell one of my sons or daughters not to join the military. Because, like I said, I have a grandson. No, I have a grandson, and he wants to join. And I will never tell him not to join. Never.
Why?
Because this is why. Because I feel like black men are getting killed walking the street. They're getting killed walking the street.
So they're supposed to go to war.
Black Rose.
Black Rose. So they're supposed to go to an unjust war and lose their lives. They're supposed to go and fight against some people that's not doing anything to them.
They like taking right here, walking the streets unjust.
You're not listening. You're not listening.
Oh, Delta, no, you're not. Yeah, but Brother Brown, welcome in.
All right, I'm sorry, I'm a little late, but I had some
time. That's okay, better late than never. Carry on, bro. Fire two, go ahead.
One thing about the military is that black people join the military as a last resort based on unemployment.
Yes.
That's the main reason why we have went into the military. When you can't find a decent job, and a lot of opportunities have been closed for us that we join the military. Now, the thing about the military today is just like it was in the 1940s before Truman integrated the troops. Even under the so-called Roosevelt, who everybody thought was such a wonderful president, he would not integrate the troops. He didn't want blacks and whites to be integrated, even though they were fighting the same war against the Germans in World War II and the Japanese. So we have to look at, like Candace said earlier, we have to look at white supremacy. And and when you talk about the beginning of white supremacy, let's go back 2,000 years ago. Let's not go to 1600. Let's go back to when the European went into Africa, stole the legacy of African people, colonized the people in their own country, and created institutions of religion, economics, and all of the things that we see that they created them for himself and made himself the creator and originator of civilization. That was the beginning of white supremacy. And it has carried on from that day forward. So you, in order to fight white supremacy, you have to know how deep the tentacles of white supremacy go. And they go very deep. They go very deep. And I hear you talk about some black people in positions. We used to have a word that we used for that back in the 60s. It's called the Peter Principle. That means being in a position but having no power. Most of these black people you see that are in these positions, they don't have any power because everything they do has to be controlled by the people that they work for, whether they're police chief, whether they're senators, whether they're even Obama. He has to be controlled by the Europeans that put him in place. So we need to understand that. And I don't care who the president is. I don't care whether it's Hillary or some other slave master. They're never going to do anything for us. And if we don't realize this and get up and do something for yourself, then white supremacy will always rule. And I hear you say, Sister Dunning, about our unity. Well, we can't have unity because our mentality is fragmented.
Thank you.
We won't buy from each other if we're in business. We won't support each other if we're financially strapped. So when we get rid of the slave mentality, they had more togetherness and unity during the time of Nat Turner than they do now. And these people were in chains of bondage. There was more unity on a plantation than we have now. And that's what we have to break. We have to break the slave mentality of being encompassed by white supremacy and racism. If we don't break it, ain't no white man gonna break it for you.
No way.
An oppressor will never give freedom to those who are oppressed.
Thank you.
Well said, Brother Brown.
All right, now.
So, I want to go back to something that Mother Hattie brought up about the, if all of us were on the right accord, how can we address the rapes that students are experiencing on these campuses?
Well, when you get black men to stand up like the Deacons of Defense did, and it don't take a whole nation of people. It takes about maybe 25 or 30 people to say that they don't take this shit no more and they're going to go buy some guns. Mm. See, and that's what it's going to take. Now, there's going to be some sacrifices made. But are they sacrificing every day? So what can we lose?
Right. I have a question. I've never lived on campus. I went to college, but I didn't live on campus. I stayed at home and drove to college. But here's something I don't understand about these stories, and not just this one y'all talking about tonight. But when I listen to sports talk radio and this issue comes up, and it's always the university didn't handle it right. The university didn't do this. The university didn't do that. Are these victims not going straight to the police and calling the police themselves? I mean, it shouldn't have nothing to do with the university policy. These are crimes. And you rape, you call 911, police come in post to investigate. So that's what I'm not understanding. Why is the onus being put on the university?
Well, even when they do call the police 911, what happens is the police start flipping back to the president of these universities.
Okay.
And they kind of like shut it down. Corruption. Like
there was so it includes the police.
They say, we're going to handle it. We're going to handle it. We're handling this. Or, like these guys did, and many of these colleges and universities, they just frankly, they really just, what you call, shut it down. And,
yes, like
at
Baylor.
They retaliated against people.
As far as to shut it down, a sister at Spelman College claimed she was gangbanged by four brothers from right across the street from the college, Morehouse. It was only one day in the news. They interviewed the shiftless-looking president of Morehouse. I didn't like the way he was responded. And next thing you know, the story was squashed. Never heard from that woman anymore. Can you imagine what pressure she was under to squash the story? And what bribe she might have been given to pay her tuition, or to just the idea that she got compensated something.
Well, yeah, they'll let you go to college for free, and people don't do it. Yeah. And then in a lot of cases, let me tell you, I had a friend who lived out there in Baltimore, and on that Penn State deal, she was telling me that that was like a prostitution ring with those little African American boys mm-hmm. in that little deal. Like they were supplying these little boys to some real high level corporate America, high level politicians,
indeed.
High level. I mean, that's why I was squashed as long as it was. And when the district attorney first tried to bring it out, which was several years before it actually hit and got busted out, he had tried to do it, and somebody squashed the prosecutor on that. That was corporate. You mess mm-hmm. with these people's supply of what they want, mm-hmm. these perverts, you got serious problems.
Mm-hmm. And then, see, like in the instance, for instance, with this Baylor case, these boys were on the football team bringing in money. People come from miles around to go to those Baylor football mm-hmm. games. So they were not about to allow these constant mm-hmm. scandals. And this is not, this one just actually came out. But with this investigation, the independent investigation revealed that there were several rapes that were covered up. These guys were known to be rapists at other campuses, were discharged and transferred, expelled from a school, brought over to another school like Baylor, and they are allowed to continue with the same
of that
practice.
Money. That's they got
right.
enough money to go where they want to go.
That's right.
And their families say, well, this is what we're going to do for you. And they do it for them, and they let them in, and they still do the same thing they've been doing all along.
But my problem with that is this.
What's that, Brother Brown?
Why do we, as people of African descent, have a hard time establishing our own form of justice?
Thank you.
And it's for what? Why do
fear.
We...
Fear!
Well, not everybody's not scared.
No, they not.
Well, you don't have too many. You don't have too many warriors. You don't have too many courageous people.
Well, you know what? You got. But the thing about being courageous people, and that's why I like looking at this last episode of Roots for the younger generation that didn't get the chance to see the last one, because you saw elements that showed us in a sense of saying, if one or two gonna fight, it might make be a full fight. But when you got everybody not willing to fight, and people, I look at all the brothers that we had, and I look at one lawyer running around, that lawyer named Crump, and he's running around making sure everybody case is straight.
Yeah.
Okay? And then all of a sudden, it's never no justice. We always take a vow, whether it's our young black women, whether it's women who being raped or murdered, we look why we're looking for some compensation instead of justice. When will we as a people say, you know what, I don't want the $2 million check. I want somebody to head the roles.
I feel you, Brother Brown. It's like, why do we...
young men that were killed, I never saw none of their parents say, I want justice for my child. A compensation is not justice. I believe in an eye for an eye. If you kill my son or my daughter, I better not find out where you live there.
Thank you.
Yep.
See, it ain't gonna be no white man's justice. It's gonna be my justice. See, some of us got an eternal spirit. We don't give a damn about that. And until we get that attitude, and I'm not going to no church and doing a whole lot of praying, because that ain't solving shit. Excuse my language. We've been praying ever since we went over here, we got off the boat, and we still treat the second-class citizen. We kicked to the curb. You understand me? And we still begging for concessions. Something is wrong with us.
Hey, Brown, they still have not erased from the Constitution that we are three-fifths. We still haven't had the Congressional Black Caucus to go into a serious
battle. We already know that. Can't do nothing about it. We're not going to go rewrite the Constitution, and they're not going to rewrite it.
No, I'm saying that the part with
Brother Brown, it's like, I feel you. Things that I can't say publicly, obviously, and but you talking about that spirit of Nat Turner, what you saying is making perfect sense to me. We got these brothers out here doing all this, well, we're told they're doing all of this killing, okay? Well, then how come ain't none of the enemy soldiers, you know, falling, and we killing ourselves and getting in beef with each other? But it's like something that Malcolm said about only a fool would allow his children to be taught by his enemy. But I'm looking at this, you know, we expecting justice from the enemy. That's justice, insane.
I don't care nothing about the Constitution. I don't care what they wrote, because you know what? When they wrote the Constitution, there was one African slave sitting at the goddamn table. And they ain't never took it out. So that lets you, in this day and time, in 2016, and that was written in what, 1787 or whatever it was, they don't give a damn about black people. Why do we keep trying to have a mentality of letting of acceptance from these people?
Because we have not adjusted to the reality of white supremacy and the whole psychology of white supremacy. We don't know what we're dealing with.
Well, we don't know by now. In the last 2 years, me and sister talked about what I tell you 2 years ago. I said, they're going to keep killing us. They're going to keep raping our women. I said, we ain't going to do a damn thing but sing, pray, and go to church, and take a settlement. And I tell you, I said, they're going to turn around the next day and do it again. Now I tell you that, Black Rose. Black Rose.
Yes, I do remember you saying that. I remember you saying it. Yeah, I remember you saying it, too.
Here's...
Until we decide to stop it, it's just like a thief that's coming in your house when you're not home, and you get tired of him stealing, then you will stop it. Find a way to stop it.
Frederick Douglass said, "The limits of tyrants are prescribed by the endurance of whom they oppress." In the light of these ideals, Negroes would be hunted at the North and held and flogged at the South, so long as they submit to those devilish outrages and make no resistance, either moral or physical.
And we can sing, we can dance, we can do all of those things. We can have barbecues, we can have parties. We're scared of devil white folks. Most of us are scared to even attack a person, verbally attack white folks. I was in the labor union. I'm not going to hold the whole phone. I was in the labor union. And, you know, sometimes you know, in the labor union, you know, you got the representatives. And I had an incident on a ship one time when I was working. And it was with a black supervisor. So we'll call the business agent. The business agent, the vice president and the business agent came to the ship and they talked about what they're going to do. They went right to the white man and they talked to him. Then they came to me and tried to quiet me down. But I got right in front of the whole ship. And I stopped the operation and I told everybody that was working. I said, these two guys ain't working for shit. I'm never going to represent you. I said, because the first thing they're going to do, the white man going to take them aside, whisper some shit in their ear. And I said, then they're going to turn against you. Brown, don't say that. I said, no, I'm going to say it because I never want y'all to represent me. I said, because you're number one, y'all punks. And I said, number two, you ain't got no backbone to stand up against no white man. See, when you get rid of a spirit of fear, a lot of us got it in one form or fashion or another. When you get rid of the spirit of fear, you don't care what you say and who you say it to. If you have to defend yourself, fight yourself. It does make a difference when it comes to folks. We haven't gotten to that point yet. We still want to be their friend. I get along with them to a certain extent. I don't hate them, because half of them don't know anything about what's going on, and I don't hold them responsible, but I don't trust none of them. And when we get to that point that we stop believing what they say and believing what they write and understanding that whatever they write and whatever they do is for their benefit, because they have no concern for humanity or other people. None. If they're not going to put themselves in power, just like this mess with Donald Trump, that ain't nothing but a game. Donald Trump did that because Donald Trump is financially scrapped. And Hillary then paid him to fuel this fire of racism so to knock everybody else out of the box. Because that is the nature of this country. You see how many people, regardless of the ignorant stuff that he said, do you see how many white people follow him? So many white people have come out of the woodwork like roaches.
That's right. That's right.
And show their true concerns for white supremacy.
Thank you.
Now, these are people that's been that you would never even thought would support something else like that. But when you see them give America back to who we're supposed to be, we'll give back to the indigenous people because y'all won't hear. But no, what they're doing is that he know he can't beat Hillary because, well, Hillary has stole the Negro vote. She stole the black vote with flying colors. And it was all a game.
Hey, she disenfranchised. She played the race community right here in Brooklyn, man.
She played the race card very well, and she played the woman vote very well.
Yep.
She played it to the man. She played it better than I ever played part of my life when I play every week. She played it very well.
Very well.
Already determined she was going to be the Democratic nominee even before everybody started voting. That's just a fact. I mean, that's just a fact. She had all the super delegates. They already set her up.
And all of them, all the black ones too. And John Lewis should be ashamed of himself. I tell you, man.
Say what now?
John Lewis.
Who?
John Lewis.
The
one that got beat in the head on the Pettus Bridge, and there's other photos of him taking all them beatings, and you know,
play that no more. You don't play that Pettus Bridge. You need to stop saying that, because that's over. He's been on that damn bridge so long. The bridge broke.
Brown
had lost all his hair, and he lost his damn mind in the process. You don't hear me.
Oh, my goodness. Well, on that note, we will end the show, and thank you, everyone. Thank you, King B. Thank you, Delta. Thank you, Axel Hart. Thank you, Brother Brown. Thank you, Scotty. Thank you, listeners, and we will be back. Peace, good night, and namaste.